Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
Oh, I love that music. That means it's the start of Faith Radio Mornings here for the 23rd of January. It's our show, part of the Faith Radio Network, where we cover the news topics and special interest stories of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective. You know, if you listen, we talk often about fixing our eyes on Jesus. He really is the only King of an eternal kingdom. Glad you're with us here this morning. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Capser, joined in studio, and their microphones are live this morning by Paul Perot and Rachel Sutton, the two producers of our show that do such a great job with the news and the guests. And Paul and Rachel, we're just kind of making some quick announcements this week about some shifts coming up to the morning show. I'm a bit of a diva, you know that, so we could celebrate me for hours on the show like this, but we should probably try to make this as quick as possible. We did announce yesterday that as of January 31st, I will be retiring from my role as the morning show host, and it's not because I don't love it here. I love working with you guys. I love our listeners. I love everything about Faith Radio. Just has gotten a little tricky to try to do life with a full-time teaching load and a business load and five kids at home that I really am missing. So my role at Faith Radio will change to some part-time hosting as well as potentially some podcasting, but certainly love my time with the two of you.
That is, unless the legal injunction goes into place that prevents you from leaving the show. We are working on that right now.
I appreciate the good faith effort on that, Paul. Rachel, I mean, you're so spot on all the time with what you bring into the program with the music and everything. I'll just miss some of the fun and the conversations and the planning. But most importantly, how much you care about our listener network and that they're really experiencing Jesus each day as we do this show.
Thanks. And yeah, I'm excited to continue the show, but we'll definitely miss you and your snark and your sarcasm.
Snark. Yeah. Yes. That works. Yep.
That's the word. But also your depth and the way that you talk with guests is really fun.
Well, I appreciate that. And it sounds like with the snark and the sarcasm that it's an invitation to a deeper discipleship journey for me moving forward. And I will miss our guests. Like I said, our first guest up this morning, I had a chance to interview Shanti Feldon, who's an author and a speaker. And she's done a lot of work on male and female conversations, including some great books, For Men Only and For Women Only, that I've used in my classes before. And Shanti and I had a conversation last week getting into some of the new APA guidelines that are outlining toxic masculinity and how she can think about that, how we can think about that as believers, and how we can respond to that situation. So don't miss this interview with Shanti Feldon next on Faith Radio Mornings. Dr. Peter Capser, and delighted to be joined at this time by author Shanti Feldon. I'm sure many of you know her work. She's written many different books, specifically about gender, masculinity, and femininity, and I've used her books myself in my classrooms. And just a delight to speak with you this morning, Shanti.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
So I referenced it just now, but I know as I've been teaching gender and sexuality classes for the better part of 10, 11 years, when I first started teaching them, I had no background in the subject at all. I remember standing there in August before September term started, and I had procrastinated way too long on my syllabus, didn't know where to start, didn't know how to begin, and somebody showed me your books, For Men Only and For Women Only, written from the perspective of helping women understand men and men understand women, and I used those books for years. They were so helpful for the young people in the classroom. I would just love to get a little window into what went into that for you. Why did you start some of that research, and where did you go with it?
Oh, I appreciate that. It's funny. I stumbled over this. You know, my background is not like you, right? Not in the PhD world. You know, I wasn't a psychologist or a therapist. I was actually an analyst on Wall Street when all of this started, and ended up actually this started because I was writing a couple of novels and one of the main characters in my novel was a man. And I realized I didn't know how to put thoughts in his head. I had no idea what a guy would be thinking. And this whole thing started because I started asking men what they would be thinking if this was them in that scenario, in that scene in the book. And I found myself so impacted, I guess is the right word, so touched even by some of the things these men were thinking, and pretty shocked in some cases. And it started me down this road of taking that analytical background and really rigorously researching how men think.
Yeah, you really ended up interviewing quite a number of people, both men and women, back during that time. And some of the results, as you said, I know for my students, they found it incredibly insightful to get into the minds of the opposite gender. I'm sure that's some of what you saw as well.
Oh, it was transformational for me in my marriage. I mean, literally, I'd come home and I'd talk to Jeff, and we'd been married maybe 8 years at this point, and I'm going, you know, guess what this guy told me today? And I've heard this like 14 times now. And Jeff tells me later that at the time he was like, you didn't know that? Like he said, I just thought you were choosing to drive me crazy or whatever. It really absolutely transformed our relationship because suddenly I had so much of a better idea of the heart behind so many of the things that he did and what I was doing that was hurting his feelings without me having any idea, and how much more, you know, what he needed. It just was transformational.
Well, and so many relationships, it seems to me, Shanti, really can end up in places of tension simply because we're not understanding what the other person is thinking or how they're processing. And I have to believe, post some of that research and the books and the conferences that you've done, that I'm guessing you've heard feedback from couples saying this was so helpful because it reduced some tension that just didn't need to be there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we get all the time. It's really fascinating. You know, we get these emails and we do a lot of events. You know, we do marriage conferences and people come up to us all the time and say things like, you know, these books saved our marriage, which of course is incredibly, you know, I'm grateful to hear that. But it points out this is really simple stuff. And if a 200 page book can save a marriage, there's a whole lot of unnecessary divorces going on. There's a whole lot of unnecessary heartache that doesn't have to be there. So that's why I'm passionate about getting this stuff out and really helping people understand each other.
One more thought on those books, Shanti, is what I appreciated about them, too, is they didn't pull any punches. I mean, you just had the unvarnished thoughts and the thought life of men and women, and that was so helpful. We weren't playing any games here.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, that was important to me.
So since that time, we've seen, I think, a pretty substantial sea change when it comes to topics of relationships and masculinity, femininity, and gender. I know in teaching these courses over these last 10 or 11 years, I'm amazed at how much things have shifted. We were not having any conversations about same-gender sexuality back in 2008, 9, and 10. We weren't having many conversations about gender dysphoria, but things have really shifted over these past maybe 8, 9, 10 years, haven't they?
Oh, dramatically. I mean, it is very interesting that just a few years ago, you wouldn't have necessarily had any controversy over the idea that gender is binary. Like, you would have had some exceptions where people were like, well, I just don't believe that, but it would not have been a cultural conversation. And it certainly would not have been something that was controversial. And the thing that's become very frustrating for me as a researcher, and actually for a lot of scientists, you know, for me as a social scientist, but also for a lot of medical professionals, is that that's just a physical reality, a physical and emotional reality. And certainly there are people who say that they don't identify that way. And I totally understand that is a small percentage of the population, but it has made it very difficult in some cases, to actually speak truth into the majority of people who really need to hear some of this, but they're turned off by the idea of, oh, well, you know, you can't say that this is what men are like or what women are like. And they need to hear it, and it would be so transformational in their relationship, but it's just hard for them to accept.
And your history and looking into these issues, Shanti, is part of why we wanted to have you on the program this morning, especially in response to some recent releases from the APA, the American Psychological Association, talking about and giving people what they consider to be a guide for quote, toxic masculinity. And before getting into that subject of toxic masculinity specifically, what's interesting is that it relates to just what you said, and that there's been kind of this rejection of the binary of masculine and feminine by many, and yet at the same time, in these guidelines, there is an affirmation that there is a binary of some kind. There is a masculinity. So the whole thing is already confusing on some levels, isn't it?
It is. It's very, forgive me for sort of calling out the APA on this, because there's been many things that they have done that have been really helpful. But in this case, not so much, because it is very intellectually inconsistent. And it does seem, for me as a professional, reading through some of the report, on these guidelines for working with men and boys, that unfortunately some sense of political correctness and ideology-based thinking sort of took over, and it has made it, I think it's going to be much harder for a psychological professional to work with men and boys using these kinds of guidelines. And I don't think it affirms men in any way. So yeah, it's been interesting to look at this.
Yeah, we're speaking with Shanti Feldon this morning, author, somebody that you probably know if you're listening and you've read books about gender, masculinity, and femininity, and just getting into the subject of the release of Toxic Masculinity Report from the American Psychological Association. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Shanti, we'd love to get your reaction as you began to page through this document and how you began to process that which you read. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Having a lively conversation with author Shanti Feldon this morning about toxic masculinity and all things gender and femininity, masculinity. And Shanti, I am 100% confident I am not pronouncing your last name the correct way. So tell our listeners, so how do we pronounce your last name, Shanti?
It's Feldon, but you were getting really close. I'm actually very impressed.
Good. There is hope. I'll continue this formational journey. Maybe I'll get it right at some point. Well, thanks again for joining us this morning. And I know some of what we've been kicking around here as the Faith Radio Mornings team is this statement that you and I referenced before the break, and that is the statement from the APA that is claiming there's something called toxic masculinity. And they released a guide to it in terms of helping people understand what is toxic about it. And boy, this is something that really has emerged in our culture over the last year or so in relation to the hashtag MeToo movement that really rightly identified terrible treatment of women over the years. But is this a pendulum swing? And how do we, where are we at with this, Shanti? You read some of the report. How did you respond to it as you were reading it?
Well, to be candid, so just to help the listeners understand, this is actually a broad report on guidelines for working with men and boys for any psychological professional. They had released guidelines for working with women and girls some time back, and this was sort of the next step, which is great. But the problem is when the report was actually released, it generated so much controversy, and as I look at it, I think rightly so. Because as I started to read through it, I was actually so sad that I couldn't finish it. I ended up just skimming, you know, once I got about halfway through, because it hurt to read this, because it was entirely about the dysfunction of men and boys. And it was entirely about the fact that sort of these things which we think of, and I've seen in the research, my research, as being a healthy way that men and boys are created, that can be turned to bad ways, that can be turned into bad things. The report almost seemed to be saying all of what masculinity is, it needs to be fixed. It is toxic that men are more competitive. It is toxic that men are more aggressive. It is toxic that there's all these characteristics And then ironically, not only did they sort of hammer men for being men, even the healthy things that you think are good about men, but then about halfway through the report or three quarters of the way through the report, they said one of the positive things that we have to affirm is that all the studies show how important fatherhood is and how important kids having a good dad and having a good relationship with their father and close relationships. And if they don't, you know, you look at the prison population and 90-something% of people in prison didn't have close relationships with their dad. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Like, the reason that dads are so important in the life of a child and in the life of our culture is exactly how they're created, which is different than how moms are created and how women are created. And so, again, it's this very intellectually inconsistent approach to reviewing men, as opposed to saying what is true, which is, look, there's a different way of being. You know, men are wired differently, even physically. Our brains are wired differently. Our hormonal makeup is different in most cases. And there's some differences here, which either gender could put to bad use or good use. And so, yes, men are designed with more testosterone, which ends up being more competitive, for example. But you know what? It also makes them much more protective of their family. And it makes them have this much greater desire. Their makeup makes them have a much greater desire to provide for and protect and want to make their wife happy and to have sort of a sense of adventure with their kids, all of which science has also proven to be very necessary. So it just made me sad that almost by definition, being masculine was considered to be an unhealthy thing instead of something we should absolutely celebrate and steer in the right direction.
Yeah, it's so helpful to hear you talk and hopeful, Shanti, along these lines, because it's possible, isn't it, that we can identify what may have been some systemic and continue to be systemic issues where men do not treat women well in a variety of ways and in some horrible ways as well, while not necessarily throwing out the baby with the bathwater and trying to then say, so can we reorder masculinity and affirm masculinity as opposed to just chucking it all out?
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, everybody, I hope, everybody listening to this would agree that, for example, the impetus and the heart behind the Me Too movement, that there is a lot of good and necessary, incredibly important sort of check yourself, help women who may be facing these sort of situations. All of that is very, very important. The idea that we have to get rid of this idea, well, boys will be boys, and so it's okay, whatever they want to do. Absolutely not. I think most people listening to this would agree that that is incredibly important. The problem comes when we begin to say, oh, this is the way most men are, that being masculine by definition is toxic. Where instead, what I've found in my research is the vast majority of men absolutely love and want to honor their wives. They want to honor women. In this culture, it's actually really difficult because of the visual nature of men and all the sexual visual images out there. It's incredibly difficult because a man has to constantly take those thoughts captive, tear down those thoughts, honor his wife, look away from the television screen, whatever it is. And most men do that. And instead of honoring that, we're somehow really saying being a man is bad. No, this is the way God has wired men. And instead, we should be celebrating and honoring and validating the way that our husbands and our sons are wired and just helping them to the degree that we can steer that in the right direction.
So helpful. And Shanti, as we have a couple minutes left here and think about families that have young boys and young girls, and I know some of the curriculum that's happening in our schools these days is at very early ages, first grade, second grade, sometimes even earlier, that the curriculum is introducing the idea that there's lots of different genders and you sort of have to choose and decide. And when we think about this dynamic in that, Shanti, do you have suggestions for parents and families to help navigate this?
Oh, sure. Listen, probably the most important thing is to recognize that because this is happening from such an early age, that we have to from the very beginning that we have to say, yes, you know, honey, I know that you heard this in school. Let's talk about why maybe that's not 100% correct. And this is driven by what people maybe want to be true, you know, that some people think that this is the way things are. But we actually know that science says something different, and you're going to, from now on, you're going to hear stuff in school that may or may not line up with what we think the truth is, whether that's scientific truth and or biblical truth. So that they're just aware, and they kind of, the kids start, they grow up learning to catch that when that happens, which in today's culture is probably a good thing anyway, right? For parents to sort of take that and be very proactive about it. But then the other thing that's really important is for parents, again, especially of boys, to celebrate how the boys are wired and not give in to the tendency to say, okay, because boys are wiggly, that means there's something wrong with them. And instead, push the schools, for example, to have spark breaks, which are these brain breaks where they get a couple minutes to run around and not have to sit there like girls do naturally. To be able to affirm the boys when they see them being aggressive is to be able to say, look, God made you competitive and you're stronger and this is good. But OK, here's how we treat people and here's how we don't treat people. So that from the very earliest ages that they see that the way that God has wired them, that this is to be celebrated. It's just that we also have high expectations.
Again, it couldn't be more helpful, Shanti. Unfortunately, we're out of time this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. Just really, if you're listening this morning, highly recommend the books that Shanti has released, For Men Only, For Women Only. Are any projects you're working on in the near-term future, Shanti?
Oh, yeah. I'm in the middle of the next research project that Jeff and I are doing, which is a totally different topic, but we're studying why do we have issues when it comes to money in our marriages? So, you know, we know money is the big cause of some conflict in marriage. And turns out there's a lot of interesting reasons underneath that has nothing to do with money.
I can't wait to see it. Yeah, that's not a tricky issue at all, you know, in terms of relationships. So, thanks for diving into all of this way you do, being on the front lines of some of this stuff. And would love to have a conversation again in the future.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, take a break, and more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. One of the topics we talk about here pretty often on Faith Radio Mornings is the increase of vaping in our country, especially among our young people. We talk with Dr. David Stevens and Dr. Rosemary Stein about some of the impact that vaping can have. And I see for our listeners in Connecticut this morning that vaping is being blamed as 4 students at Portland High School in Connecticut were sent to the hospital. Police say the students apparently vaped an unknown substance in a school bathroom. The students returned to class, but a teacher alerted the nurse when one of them was drowsy and not participating in class. They were taken to Middlesex Hospital for observation. I know, again, it's something that Dr. Stein and Dr. Stevens has talked about, that vaping is not terribly safe, and especially when we begin to experiment with some unknown substances in that. So as parents, be on the lookout for those sorts of things. Well, up next here on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by Hunter Baker of Union University, and Hunter and I are going to talk quite a bit about some of the different political headlines, including the many entrants into the 2020 presidential platform among the Democratic Party.
When does life begin? This is one of those so-called political or social issues about which the Bible is crystal clear. This is Jim Garlow. Let me ask you a question. Is it right to kill a baby when it's 1 year of age? No, most people would say. Is it right to kill a baby when it's 1 minute old? Well, no. How about when it's 1 second old? Well, no, of course not. How about 1 second before it's born? Then they get fuzzy. And what about 10 minutes before it's born? And what about 3 months before it's born? You get the picture right away. Slippery slope. Conception begins at life. And we have no right to assume that we can come along and arbitrarily play God and kill a baby just because it has not made it safely down the birth canal. Stand for life. God does. You and I have got to do the same. There's more on this at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 22 minutes before the top of the hour. And we are joined at this time by Dr. Hunter Baker, who's a regular contributor to Faith Radio Mornings. And Hunter is a university fellow, dean of College of Arts and Sciences, as well as an associate professor of political science at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. Good morning, Hunter.
Good morning to you.
Always great to have you on the program. I know there's any number of things we could get to this morning, including the fact that we're seeing a lot of Democrats begin to throw their hat in the ring for the 2020 election cycle, the most recent this week being Kamala Harris. Where do we sort of stand on the number of candidates? Do you see anybody that's actually publicly declared that they're running for office having staying power in this situation?
You said who's actually declared.
Right.
That's a good question. Kamala Harris is interesting to me because she could be like Barack Obama, recently elected to the Senate, but so was he when he ran. She potentially could catch fire. But I would say she's untested. If I recall, when she ran for Senate in California, it was one of these races where there was not even a Republican in the general election. It may have been one of those two Democrat general elections in California. And I think I can remember her opponent dabbing in a debate. So I don't think she's been really tested, but she could have that, she's. I think that like Obama, she's mixed race, probably Ivy League pedigree, if I recall. And so you could see her being kind of like him in her appeal.
Yeah, she seems to have a bit of charisma about her as well as a bit of toughness, too. And so, you like you said, you could see her having some staying power compared to some of the other candidates. There are some people waiting on the sidelines that I know sort of the country's waiting for their announcements or lack thereof. Do you see somebody on the sidelines that might throw their hat in later that could really offer a challenge in that way?
Well, we have the Beto boomlet could continue. I think it would be really weird for somebody to run for president after failing to win their statewide race. But Beto O'Rourke generated so much attention in Texas and outperformed other statewide races in his run against Ted Cruz. So he's potentially out there, a big darling of the progressive left. Joe Biden is an interesting possibility. He would be very formidable, although in the Me Too era, he has potential problems. And Hillary has toyed around with it as well.
Yeah, it'd be incredible if she made another run at it. That would be sort of time number four that she'd be considering this situation. It's going to be interesting to see. And other political conversations relative to who is in office right now, and not just who's running for office, but we saw a change in the guard in the House of Representatives. And it seems like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is in the news maybe most among all of the new Congress people. And we see her really sort of mastering the Twitter sphere, the social media phenomenon. And I heard some things, Hunter, where even some of the older members of the Democratic Party are asking her to sort of tutor them in how to use social media. This is a bit like President Trump's use of social media that was so effective in the 2016 election cycle. She has well over a million followers, and boy, she has an ability to get her message out there.
No question about that, although I continue to be mystified at the attention she gets. She has won election to Congress, but in Congress, your years in service relates in a big way. Your seniority relates in a big way to your influence. She is very junior, in terms of her public policy acumen, I would say doesn't know all that much. She gives a good quote, but sometimes I'm kind of like, why does anybody want to listen to her? I would say that about almost anybody in that position. And maybe it'd be different if they had a lot of experience, or a lot of expertise in a particular area. But she, in some sense, she's a little bit famous for being famous. Now we'll see. I mean, she may turn out to be very formidable as a policymaker, things like that. But right now, it's to me, it's kind of like People magazine in politics.
And Hunter, I know you work with a lot of young people, as I do too. And one of the things that I've noticed over the past 10 years is that there are so many more possible voices to listen to on a day-to-day basis, because we have so many voices coming through our phones. There's such accessibility on places like YouTube and other environments. And so there's a sense in which I've wondered, are we mixing up a sense of credibility and authority with that which is also viral? And what I mean by that is, because something's gone viral, we interpret it, or at least young people can often interpret it, as being credible and authoritative because it's popular, as you say. Are you seeing some similar dynamics among your younger generation?
I think that is true. I mean, you know, I think that right now politicians, and I've seen this with Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and others. Maybe we should include Lindsey Graham in that list of politicians who have sort of mastered the highly emotional 30-second clip or 1-minute clip that then people can post, you know, and add the like button or write in capital letters, yes, you know, or whatever like that, you know, but just sort of that. But there seems to be this premium on performance, right? Almost a dramatic performance that can be quickly encapsulated in a video. You know, she's kind of joining the ranks of some people who have already blazed a trail in that way.
Well, and as we think about just that piece of it, as you said so well, as what is postable and what really plays in kind of a soundbite standpoint, we're sort of in uncharted territory as a culture. We haven't had this kind of experience before, and I don't know what it might take to swing back to more of a thoughtful, analytical conversation with depth and substance. I think if a politician came out on either side right now and tried to offer sort of a policy wonk kind of document or statement, it seems like it would just get lost in all the noise these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and honestly, I mean, in 2016, that sort of is what happened to many of the Republicans running for president. You know, there were some serious policy people on the Republican side. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, you're talking about an incredibly intelligent, sophisticated, policy expertise with him. Jeb Bush, same way, tremendously successful governor of Florida, and somebody who really knows a lot of things. Scott Walker, also deeply enmeshed in the details of policy in Wisconsin, and Donald Trump blew all those guys away. And for that matter, Ted Cruz, you know, I don't know if people realize this. Ted Cruz would make a ton of sense for the Supreme Court. You know, he has that kind of level of legal and constitutional knowledge. And, you know, he was sort of the last man standing.
Yeah, we definitely have seen his name floated around from time to time in terms of that constitutional knowledge. So hopefully, Hunter, at least within the Supreme Court, we don't get reduced down to Twitter statements, that there is thoughtful policy, because there sure are a lot of decisions ahead in 2019 and beyond in terms of impact on our country. When we come back, well, I'd love to change the topic a little bit away from Washington, D.C., and get into your thoughts about this Gillette ad that really sort of made an impact in our country in terms of how it portrayed men as being toxic, and there's this toxic masculinity and a bit of a backlash relative to that ad. So more to come with Hunter Baker next on Faith Radio Mornings. Before the top of the hour, we're having a fun conversation with Dr. Hunter Baker here, who is University Fellow and Associate Professor of Political Science at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. He comes on Faith Radio Mornings regularly to help me think through some of the politics and different cultural situations of the day. And Hunter, there was a Gillette ad, from what I understand, for razors that came out here in the last week or so. And it was a pretty roundly panned for representing what they perceived to be toxic masculinity. Sounds like the commercial implored men to be better while showing scenes of boys wrestling at a cookout, bullies chasing a boy down a street, men catcalling women, making lewd jokes and all of this. It certainly was not maybe received in the way that Gillette intended it for it to be received.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a classic example of what is sometimes called virtue signaling, right? I mean, Gillette is making clear how enlightened they are with a commercial of this type. But the thing is that for a critique to hit home, you have to feel like that it represents reality. And so take bullying. Yeah, I mean, there's bullying that occurs. You know, I was bullied as a kid and had to fight on multiple occasions. But I never took bullying to be kind of a primary feature of maleness, right? You know, that I didn't think of my fellow boys as bullies, right? You know, yes, they're outliers, people who are bullies. So basically they take the worst behaviors of men that are not manifested, you know, by the majority of men on a daily basis, and sort of act as though that's sort of emblematic of what men have become. I think that was part of the problem. And plus, you know, I noticed a number of people produced pictures of Gillette models in skin tight outfits, you know, at sporting contests and things like that. So it's a little bit of a turn on a dime for Gillette.
And you make a good point, Hunter, that it doesn't mean that these things don't exist, but it sure seems like we make the out of the ordinary the normative so quickly. And what I mean by that is you think about maybe a million children play safely on the playground on the monkey bars each morning, and then one child falls off, and pretty soon public policy is that we have to have, you know, wood chips and different rubberized mats. And it's not that we shouldn't do that, but so much of our conversations are driven by what are the outliers as opposed to that which is normative.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, that's something that I think of as a college administrator, that, you know, you have to avoid the temptation to do what I call is exception processing. You know, one unusual thing happens, and then you rearrange your entire process because of it.
And I think that's understandable on some levels, because it's usually out of the ordinary that makes an impact on us emotionally or spiritually, sometimes physically. And those are the things that tend to stick with us as opposed to just the ordinary life as it goes by.
Well, watch news, right? I mean, none of us would watch the news if they have tried this, right? Nobody watches the news if it's a report of all the good things that happened. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. We want to know about what went wrong.
So as we're listening and watching, consuming media, Hunter, what do you suggest for people to be sort of thoughtful as they do so? Because certainly there's a lot of research that does go into what's going to gain our attention and get some clicks from us. I think every time I go on FoxNews.com or CNN.com, there seems like there's a couple legitimate stories, but I'm not even sure about that. And then usually 3, 4, 5 stories in, it's something about sexuality, something about a grotesque murder, something about, you know, somebody getting eaten by a crocodile. And it's just, is this really news? How do we process this kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, I have first of all, it's important to always kind of keep your original sin lens on, right? Always be aware that virtually anybody who is writing for your consumption, unless they are laboring mightily against it, they are going to manifest their bias. They do have a program that they're trying to put forward, even if they're theoretically supposed to be neutral. So you always have to be asking yourself, well, what are they trying to achieve with this article, right? You know, what are the facts, and how do I separate that from the places where they're clearly manifesting their opinion? That having been said, I have found that outlets that report financial news are often a little bit better. And I think that's because, so for instance, the Wall Street Journal, and I think part of that is because people are reading with an eye toward making investments and running businesses. And so there's a little bit more of a premium on attempting to deliver objective information.
Talking with Hunter Baker this morning, who's Associate Professor of Political Science at Union University. And Hunter, one more topic to get into here in our last couple minutes, and that has to do with some of what we saw in the marches and the confrontation with the Covington Catholic High School students. And kind of talk us through what you saw in this situation.
Oh, gosh. you know, the thing that I can't understand, I mean, is why, you know, so many people have had to walk back comments. So many people said awful, awful things about these children on the basis of almost nothing. And the thing that I keep asking myself is, what has happened to us where we feel the need to deliver a strong, strong opinion on things that are happening, you know, that we're not even there for, we have almost no context? Why do we even do that? You know, I would never, you know, read something in the newspaper that annoyed me and then grab a stranger on the street and immediately begin expressing my disgust, right? You know? but to some extent, that's what we do on social media. It's like, it's very important. Richard John Neuhaus, of First Things, you know, before he died, he used to have this thing where he would write the back of the book, and sometimes he would look at things like this and he would say, "Attention must be paid," you know, kind of in a sarcastic way. And we have become those people who are, you know, constantly issuing our opinions and attention must be paid.
And we certainly have the outlet to do so now, too. I know you and I chatted at the beginning of the segment about the social media possibilities and what goes viral and is credible, Hunter. And as opposed to maybe you and I having a conversation about something or at a coffee shop, now we can have our conversations and everybody can see it. Certainly is a different time.
That's right. And that's part of what makes Facebook painful sometimes, right? You choose to hold a conversation in front of several other people. I certainly do it. I try to do it sometimes for educative functions, but it can go bad, right? A conversation held in front of an audience can turn negative pretty easily.
For sure. Well, thanks for your time again this morning, Hunter. It's always really enlightening when you come on Faith Radio mornings like this, and look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat.
Thanks so much.
We'll wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up in hour two next on Faith Radio mornings. Well, Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com has just sauntered into the studio, so we'll take a short break at the top of the hour here, and we come back. Bill and I are going to talk about the importance of prayer if you're leading a business.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at MyFaithRadio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at MyFaithRadio.com.